We're back with another jam-packed episode of Dale Carter's America, and on this show, we'll be talking about the Rittenhouse trial and its after effects. We'll have updates on COVID, the economy, and science, plus some giblets for Thanksgiving, all on Dale Carter's America.
From the heart of flyover country, he's not on the far right, and he's certainly not on the far left. Like you, he's somewhere in the middle. This is Dale Carter's America.
With Kurt Wheeler, I am Dale Carter, and we're going to start today's episode talking about the latest breaking news on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. This is the spigot of gasoline that we keep in the event of a major emergency in this country. And President Biden apparently is declaring that emergency because gas prices are higher than they have been in 7 years. It's a global effort from the energy-consuming nations to slow the rapid rise in fuel prices. This is coordinated between the United States, India, China, Japan, South Korea, and the UK. And Kurt, my question right off the tap is, we went from an exporting nation of fuel, okay, a net exporter of fuel, to a net importer, to where we're begging OPEC to turn on the spigot. They won't, so we're going to tap into something that really we should only use in the event of a national emergency, like a military emergency. We've been attacked. That's what that strategic reserve is for.
Right, yeah. So then, obviously, the follow-up question is, what's going to happen when there is an actual emergency and we don't have any oil left?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So, I mean, you know, you have to look at the policy changes that have happened this year. And again, Joe Biden was proud of it. On day one, I'm going to X the Keystone XL pipeline. Mm-hmm. We're going to end fracking. We're going to stop drilling here. We're going to stop drilling there. And if you're drilling anywhere in America, we're going to make it damn hard for you to continue.
And it's interesting, too, because I saw a story just the other day that they actually are still drilling. There was a story, I think it was NPR, you know, how I always talk about NPR and reading their articles and reading their comments.
We love NPR.
On Facebook. But there was a story that they posted that apparently there's a big area in the Gulf of Mexico or off the shore somewhere where they're actually opening up and people are bidding, you know, oil companies are bidding on, you know, building drilling there. So, I mean, they are doing some, you know, which is obviously against what they say they're doing. But it's clearly not enough, and it hasn't actually happened yet. They're just in the bidding phase. So I think production, you know, is the big thing. We need more oil production. We had that under Trump. We don't have it under Biden.
Well, and before my liberal friends' heads all explode, and there's plenty for your heads to explode over in this episode, I mean, I personally have been for an all-in energy policy to get to renewables that are sustainable, that can actually run this economy. What I'm not for is artificially stopping everything and propping up something that is not sustainable yet and running our economy into the ground.
Right. Yeah, and we've talked about this before too, but it's interesting that they don't mention nuclear hardly ever. You know, these environmental activists and you know, green energy people and stuff like that. It's all about wind and solar, which have been proven. I mean, unless there's some pretty dramatic increases in the technology, mm-hmm. you know, that they're not effective, they're not cost effective, they're not environmentally you know, efficient. So we should be looking at nuclear.
Absolutely.
If we really want to have sustainable energy, but that doesn't really seem to be in the cards. So that just is another tell that this is all ideological and it's not really based in reality.
A little history lesson, and there's going to be some history for my Democrat liberal leaning friends here. Because your party used to be at front and center on a lot of this stuff. The Manhattan Project was started under FDR, and then Harry Truman inherited it when FDR died. And his goal all along was to find peaceful uses for nuclear energy to power our grid, mm-hmm. you know, not just for weapons of mass destruction. We're talking about how we could power it. And does nuclear come with a downside and we ought to have caution flags out? Absolutely we should. But other parts of the world are embracing nuclear energy and it's making a big difference.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, everyone gets scared because of like Chernobyl and Fukushima.
Three Mile Island.
But, you know, the technology has improved so much since then. I mean, especially with Chernobyl. I mean, Chernobyl was the one of those three, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Dale, or somebody in the audience, but I believe Chernobyl was the only one of the three, Chernobyl, Fukushima, and Three Mile Island, where there were casualties.
Mass casualties.
And we're talking about, you know, the 1960s or whatever it was, maybe 70s.
And it was the Soviets.
In the Soviet Union. Where they have, like, no safety measures whatsoever. The building is, like, 150 years old. It's just some brick building that they're, like, you know, doing nuclear reactors in. And it's just not safe. Compared to what we have now, I mean, there's, you know, triple safety measures for everything. It would be very difficult for something like that to happen.
There is a great miniseries, and the title of it is escaping me, about Chernobyl.
I think it's just called Chernobyl.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I've
really
seen it.
Good.
Yeah, it is good.
Really good.
It is
and
good.
Really scary when you talk about a government that had, like, no safety protocols,
right,
where we have a lot of safety protocols. So Strategic Petroleum Reserve has been tapped, and, you know, when we run out, we run out.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it could be one of those things. You know, they've been saying that we're going to be running out of oil for, you know, decades now. It's like the climate change, global cooling, then global warming, then climate change. I mean, part of it might just be, you know, doom and gloom from the media. But certainly if we do have an actual reserve of oil that we're saving for emergencies, then we should actually be saving it for emergencies, and we should be doing as much as we can to increase our supply in the meantime.
All right, speaking of running, Joe Biden says he's running again in 2024. Now, Joe Biden, just by the calendar here, will be 82 years old in 2024. You know, you could get people to argue it either way, but I think if you're really objective about this, nobody thinks he's the sharpest blade in the drawer.
Yeah, well, he just had his medical examination, and according to his doctor,
right,
I'm using quotation marks with my fingers, he's, you know, in great health, so no problems.
And Democrats, especially donors, are praying that Trump runs. And we've talked about that on this podcast. That is their only prayer for winning in 2024, is if Donald Trump runs. He's proven it. I mean, you know, we've talked about how the Senate is Democrat now because of the stunts that Trump pulled after the election down in Georgia. I mean, it gave them the Senate. And if he runs again, it will give them the presidency again. Democrats say no matter who they run against him. I really doubt that it's going to be Joe Biden.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that you make a good point about the Senate and things like that. But I think having had 4 years of the Biden presidency, people are going to miss Donald Trump, you know, regardless of whether you like him or not, if you vote for him in the primary or not. I mean, certainly if he runs, he is basically a shoo-in for the Republican nomination.
I think that the
enthusiasm of people voting for him would be higher in 2024 than it was in 2020.
We'll see. But, you know, where I stop you on that is I miss his policies. I don't miss the circus, the clown show, and all that. And if you find me somebody who will implement his policies, like DeSantis in Florida, imagine a ticket with him and Tim Scott as the vice president.
Right.
Unstoppable, without all the theatrics that go along with it. Plus, it's a new generation. We don't want a couple of old guys going at it again.
Right. No, you know? I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think it just, like I said, it all comes down to whether Trump runs or not. If he runs, he's a shoo-in for the nomination. If he doesn't, then it'll be more competitive, and we're looking at maybe DeSantis or somebody else.
We at Dale Carter's America are putting together some things, and we have a campaign song for Biden running in 2024, and it goes a little bit like this.
Who's gonna vote for Senator Joe? He can't recall his area code. Hey now, where is he? He doesn't know. Where are you going, Senator Joe? Who's gonna vote? Now Joe, his brain turned into pizza dough. What country is this? He doesn't know. What are you saying? See now, Joe.
What do you think of that?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. That's pretty darn good. So we'll see what happens there. You saw the news over the weekend in Waukesha, Wisconsin. A man driving an SUV through the parade route. And I've kind of laid back and I've wondered how the coverage of this was going to unfold. This is from our wire service, which is written by NBC, because what I saw over the weekend when they flashed the mugshot, it's a man of color.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing you have to check if you're in the media. You got to say,
right,
okay, white guy, black guy.
Right.
Okay, black guy. Here's how the story is written. The man accused of driving his SUV through parade route barriers in Waukesha, Wisconsin, was captured on doorbell video before he was arrested. The video shows Daryl Brooks pleading for help Sunday in the Milwaukee suburb, and later shows authorities arriving at the home and telling him to put his hands up. He's accused of killing five people and injuring dozens more at a holiday parade. I mean, they've soft-pedaled it. It's not the lead story. It's buried in every newscast.
Yeah.
The guy's got a rap sheet that's 50 pages long. He got out on bail for like a grand, and this happened.
Yep. I think that's the main story right now until we find out more about this guy or any potential motive. You know, people were saying that he was running away from the cops because he had ran someone else over earlier in the day and they were trying to chase him or something. But that doesn't really make much sense to me. I mean, if you're running away from the cops, do you really just steer into a parade route? You know, it seems a little bit of a stretch. But I think until we know more about all that stuff, the real headline thus far is the fact that he was released from prison. I mean, like you said, he had a rap sheet a mile long. He had other violent crimes in his past. He was a career criminal. I mean, these people shouldn't be out on the streets. And, you know, you even have some Democrats saying that now, you know, looking at comments and looking at Twitter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just so obvious. I mean, these people should not be released. It's $1,000 bail. You know, I mean, it's come on.
Well, and there are places, and the vice president certainly believes this, where he shouldn't have any bail.
Yeah.
Just, you know, write a little note. Okay, you got a problem. You come back later, maybe.
Right.
And then you go right back out on the street.
Right.
And the cops, the frustration that our cops feel is they keep busting the same people over and over and over again. And now this guy has killed a lot of people.
Right. And it happens way more often than, you know, the media will let on. But people, I mean, the recidivism rates for violent criminals in prison are so ridiculously high. It's very disturbing, and we should have learned our lesson by now not to let these people out, you know,
well,
before they're supposed to.
We'll tie it into the Rittenhouse trial here coming up a little bit later on, and I also have my pat answer, my solution for how to deal with stuff like this, and believe it or not, Republicans in the House are on board with my plan. We'll talk about that coming up here as well. Speaking of the House, the big spending bill, the multi-trillion dollar Build Back Better, because you got to have your acronyms, mm-hmm. you know, BBB, mm-hmm. trillions of dollars. CBC even says it's going to add $500 billion to the debt, which goes against what Biden and those folks have said. It did pass after Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy did his audition for Speaker of the House by speaking for 8.5 straight hours.
Yeah.
Sets a new record for the longest speech in the House, but it didn't do anything because they passed it. It goes on to the Senate now, and we'll see what becomes of it.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that off air, I believe, on Friday, but it's just, you know, I mean, I like the enthusiasm, but it's so performative. You know, it's just, it's clearly not accomplishing anything unless you're actually able to change people's votes, which it seems like on this particular bill, everyone kind of has their mind made up already. So I don't know. It seems like a waste of time.
We'll see. We're all watching Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema.
I have to go to the bathroom really bad. I'm sorry.
Are we leaving that in?
We can, yes.
You do use the bathroom to go one or two. You don't stay there when you are through. Here's what you do, and you don't do. When you go to use the bathroom, here's what you do.
Back to the House. House Republicans introducing a bill to decriminalize and tax marijuana. Not sure where you stand on this.
I'm generally pro-legalization, I would say.
Now, you know, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. I mean, is this something you've done, you've tried?
Oh, yeah. I've definitely
done it before. I think everybody
has,
right? I mean, even if they say they don't, they probably did. I mean, Bill Clinton said he did it, but he didn't inhale, which was the most ludicrous answer I ever heard to anything. Okay. Representative Nancy Mace, a South Carolina Republican, brought the bill forward to remove marijuana from the federal list of controlled substances and leave regulation to the states. It would tack on a 3% tax to help fund law enforcement, mental health initiatives, and small business. It would expunge federal criminal marijuana records and free about 2,600 inmates. I support this on multiple levels. First of all, I will tell you, it's not my thing. I've done it once or twice, tried, experimented with it or whatever. It's just not my thing. And I went to kind of a rough high school where they were selling joints mm-hmm. in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And even back then, my thought process on it when I was in high school was, This stuff is coming in a baggie. I have no idea what is in this stuff. And back then, you know, some people were dying from spiked marijuana.
Yep.
And my thought was, booze is controlled. Booze goes through regulations, right? We know what's in booze. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily know what's in your little baggie there. So I'm going to pass. And so my thing was always drinking. But what I'd always heard was the reason that alcohol is okay and marijuana is not is because alcohol had a better lobby in the beginning.
That might have a lot to do with it. Yeah, I mean, similar to the tobacco lobby of the 60s and 70s and 50s, yeah. I guess. But yeah, I had a similar story. An ex-girlfriend from high school, she had epilepsy or something like that. And she had was given some spiked pot, and she ended up in the hospital for like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And almost died. But yeah, I mean, I think that will still happen. I mean, just based on, without giving too much away, based on personal experience and friends and stuff like that. I mean, I think if you make it legal, a lot of people will go through that route, but not everyone will go through that route. But I just think as a general rule, this isn't really the business of the federal government.
It's not.
I think there's a big clash right now between the states who are trying to legalize and the federal government who is still classifying this as a Schedule I narcotic. And then you know, it's becoming less of an issue now because I think they're just not enforcing it. But certainly, like, when Colorado first legalized and when other big states were starting to legalize, you had actual, like, clashes between law enforcement, between local and state law enforcement, yeah, and federal law enforcement. And that's a big issue and something that is not really sustainable. So, I mean, the tax thing, you know, I don't know how I feel about that. It just depends on, I would have to know more specifics, but certainly, you know, just a simple one-page bill, one-paragraph bill.
Wouldn't that be great?
That, you know, this is removed from the Schedule I narcotics list would solve a lot of problems.
But the side effect that it would have is removing those inmates. And I could use those cells because I think that we should take violent criminals and put them in there.
Right. Well, you also have, you know, there's nuance in there too, because if you're talking about releasing people who are only convicted of a marijuana offense, then I would agree that, you know, there might be some leeway there and maybe they could be released early or something like that. But there's a lot of crossover, you know, in terms of crime. Drug crime crosses over, sure, into violent, absolutely, crime or property crime. And then, you know, in just within drug crime, it's not just marijuana. You know, you have people selling fentanyl, cocaine, you know, other drugs that have not been legalized and likely will not for a long time. So there's nuance in there too. You have to look at each case individually and figure out what the best
path
forward
is. Well, you know what my goal
is.
I want to get violent offenders off the street.
Right.
And taking up space with nonviolent offenders with no violence it's causing things like what happened in Waukesha, where the guy's, yeah, got a 50-page rap sheet,
right,
and you've got nowhere to put him, so right, he just goes right back out on the street.
Right. And it's interesting, you know, when they release the people, like, you would think that they would prioritize those nonviolent drug offenders, especially marijuana, since that's, you know, kind of on the way out anyways, when you have somebody like this guy in Wisconsin that, you know, commits a violent crime.
Allegedly.
And then is going to prison. And so let's say hypothetically they don't have the room. They'll be like, oh, okay, let's take this guy, you know, who's in for a dime bag. We'll let him go and then we'll use that cell.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it would seem to make sense, but that's not what's happening. So.
All right. Dave Chappelle is in the news again. Dave Chappelle went to high school in Washington, D.C. at Duke Ellington School of the Arts. And they actually named the theater after him at that school. Well, guess what? He's got that problematic Netflix thing out there, right? So the school has canceled him. He was supposed to be there for a fundraiser. In the past, he's donated $100,000 to the school, gifted it one of his Emmy Awards, and hosted a master class with Bradley Cooper and Chris Tucker.
Mm.
Now, so they've canceled him. So Dave Chappelle has another place he can put his money. He can donate money.
Dale Carter's America.
I don't know about that. St. Jude would be a good one.
Oh, okay.
Donate to St. Jude. Kids with cancer and all that. I can't believe this. They're looking at a gift horse in the mouth over something that was stand-up comedy.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I mean, we've beaten this one to death, but I mean, it's funny that
they're
changing the name of the theater. Is that what they're doing?
No, at this point they have just said they don't want him for the fundraiser.
Oh, okay. Well, That'll probably be
It'll be next.
Yeah,
you bet it will. They will change the name.
Maybe they'll give him his $100,000 back.
A lot to drill down on with Dale Carter's America this week. We'll be back with an update on the Rittenhouse trial and the after effects, COVID, the economy, a science update, and we'll look at Thanksgiving, some giblets for Thanksgiving 2021. All that coming up on Dale Carter's America.
Christmas at Frontier Justice. Give the gift of personal protection for you and your family. The Byrna Launcher is the newest thing in less lethal self-defense. Accurate to 60 feet with real stopping power. Used in over 175 law enforcement agencies. Add it to your self-defense tools or buy it for someone who is more comfortable with the option. Get a free holster, a $40 value with a purchase on Black Friday weekend. Faith, family, freedom in Lee Summit and KCK or online at frontier-justice.com.
Kyle Rittenhouse, not guilty on all counts. Your thoughts?
Fantastic.
It's not a reason to celebrate. I hate that. I don't want a celebration on either side, a celebration or a riot on either side.
I could not disagree more.
Two people died and one person was injured.
I could not disagree more, man. I think this is cause for celebration for sure. Because the right to self-defense was on trial. And Kyle said this himself multiple times, including in his interview last night with Tucker Carlson, which I'll get to later. But it wasn't about Kyle Rittenhouse. I mean, it was obviously this specific case was about Kyle Rittenhouse. But broadly speaking, it was about the right to self-defense. It was a right about the right to protect your community and yourself against violent attackers. And these three people with a long criminal history, including child rape in one case, attacked Kyle Rittenhouse and they paid the price. And I am totally okay with that. And I am totally okay with celebrating the guy who defended his life against a pedophile and not having any qualms about it.
Okay, well, you can be on that side of it and I'll be on this side of it, that I don't look at things in broad terms. I look at it as a narrow case. And I'm going to use the narrow case to blow the race baiters out of the water on this. Because the narrow case is, was he entitled to self-defense when he was attacked by other people in a mob?
Right.
And he was. I mean, to your point, that was what the ruling was. There was a black person on the jury. The jury heard all of the facts, tuned out the noise coming from the outside, and they found him not guilty on all counts. Now, I ask some liberal friends of mine, how is this racist? How is what happened to Kyle Rittenhouse, how's that whole trial, how's it racist? So I asked a liberal, and they said, well, you know, this was a social justice gathering there in Wisconsin. No, it wasn't. It was a riot, okay? It's like you've got a white guy who killed two white people, injured a third white person. Mm-hmm. How is it racist? What is the racial component?
Yeah, it's such a stretch. And I mean, I'm going to, throughout this conversation, I'll kind of refer back to this interview that he did last night with Tucker, because there's a clip about this specifically that I'm going to drop. You know, Tucker brings up whether this is about race, and Kyle says it's not about race, that it's about self-defense, and, you know, that he agrees with the BLM movement and stuff like that.
Yeah, I did hear that. So a question I would have for our liberals who listen this far into the podcast without their head exploding, how would a guilty verdict in this trial have helped one black person?
It wouldn't have helped anybody. It would have.
But what's the win? I mean, you know, because obviously it spurred riots.
Right.
What's the win? What was the positive thing that could have come out of this from the black person's perspective if Kyle had been found guilty on any of these charges?
Well, the obvious answer is nothing. But I think that, you know, for them, it's about just the optics of a win in what they perceive to be a racist case, which is, I mean, the whole framing is just false and ridiculous from the beginning. So obviously their perceived win, if they got a guilty verdict, is going to be false and ridiculous. But I think that's what it's about. And, you know, they see this kid as an enemy of, you know, the BLM movement. They have this crazy idea that, like, he was just going in there to shoot people, and that, you know, oh, now, like, I'm seeing people on Twitter, a lot of people on the left, you know, Mark Ruffalo being an example. His tweet was so ridiculous. But they're like, oh, now he got a not guilty verdict. It's open season on protesters. Yeah. You know, like now any right-wing lunatic can just go into a protest with a gun and start shooting people. It's like, dude, you're not paying attention to what's going
on. The collective left lost their minds over this.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere you looked on Twitter and on the media like MSNBC and CNN, they lost their minds over this. And protests and riots, not necessarily in Kenosha. It was quiet in Kenosha. But places like Portland, where Portland's like a powder keg, it's always ready to explode.
Oh, I mean, those are just spoiled brats who are looking for any reason to riot. I mean, what does a case in Kenosha, I mean, other than the broader implications of self-defense, which we've talked about, but the specific verdict on whether Kyle Rittenhouse was found guilty or not guilty, what the hell does that have to do with you in Portland? And why are you going to take that opportunity to just go out in the street and start burning stuff? I mean, they're just spoiled brats. They have nothing better to do.
Chicago and New York, there were riots there as well. Where outrage is expressed with a new Louis Vuitton bag.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Right.
I mean, you know, tell me how that, I try and make sense out of stuff like this. So I go back to the beginning. You got a white guy killing two white guys, injuring a third white guy, and somehow the left thinks that there's justice in it if he's found guilty for the black community.
Right.
So he's not. He's not guilty on all counts. And so a lot of people, most of them people of color from the video that I saw, breaking into stores and stealing things.
Yep.
How does that – where's the calculus in that?
It's purely chaos, man. It's just vindictive, retributive chaos and destruction for the sake of destruction. And I think, you know, you make a good point that it is a good exercise. And, you know, I hope that we try and do this sometimes. Maybe we need to do it more. I try and do it in my own personal life, but it is a good exercise to try and steel man your opposition, right? Like when you are, you know, advocating for or against like BLM or whatever the case may be, to think to yourself, okay, what is the best possible argument that could be made for the opposition? Like, what is their case? You know, what is their best case that they have to offer? And in this particular circumstance, they're just, I don't see it, you know, and you don't see it. I mean, there just is no case for what they're arguing. And so it's impossible to steel man. And I want to add one more thing too, and I'm going to drop another clip from the interview here, because it wasn't just, you know, Mark Ruffalo and MSNBC and everyone else that was all upset about the Rittenhouse verdict. It was the president of the United States, Joe Biden, who came out with a statement saying, I know everybody is angry and, you know, upset about this verdict, as am I, you know, but don't go out and riot, blah, blah, blah. And Kyle Rittenhouse in the interview with Tucker last night had a message directly for the president.
What did you make of the president of the United States calling you a white supremacist?
Mr. President, if I could say one thing to you, I would urge you to go back and watch the trial and understand the facts before you make a statement. It's actual malice defaming my character for him to say something like that.
Well, you know, the interesting thing that's going to come out of all this, remember the kid in Virginia, you know, that ended up suing people for defamation. You know, they better get some checkbooks out because of how they defamed this kid.
Yep. And I'll drop a clip there from the interview as well, because Tucker asked him about that. He said, you know, a lot of people are saying that you should be suing these people. What are you going to do? And Kyle basically says, I have great lawyers and they're working on it.
I think a lot of people watching have reached the same conclusion, and they would like to see you, you know, help make this better by holding some of these liars to account. Do you plan to do that?
I have really good lawyers who are taking care of that right now. So I'm hoping one day there will be accountability for their actions that they did.
You know, equating these protests with MLK's actual nonviolent protests just turns my stomach. You know, I was a little kid when that stuff was going on, but I've read enough history to know exactly what happened there. And I think one of the ways that we overcome this, where we lost the battle on a lot of this stuff, was the practice of, okay, well, let's let them riot here. And we'll draw the line here. We won't let them go beyond this.
Right.
Okay. They've got to stop this shit immediately. And I'll go back to what happened in Ferguson. I was on the city council in Blue Springs, and the mayor of Blue Springs is Carson Ross. He's a black man. And he and I were having a conversation, and he said, I would have stopped this shit on day one.
Yep.
That's the kind of bold leadership we need that we don't have in enough places. Stop this shit immediately. And you talk to your point about Portland, a bunch of spoiled brats out there not getting their way, and so they're going to burn the town down.
Yep.
We've got to stop that.
Yeah, and I mean, you give them an inch and they take a mile. I mean, that's kind of the common theme throughout this. And, you know, that was the case in Kenosha last summer as well. I mean, the police were essentially told to stand down. The National Guard was non-existent. They didn't really have a presence until it was too late, until all of this damage had been done. I mean, they burned down multiple car lots. They burned down, you know, whole city blocks. There was multiple people severely injured. And then, of course, the people that were shot by Kyle Rittenhouse. And, you know, you see, if you watch the video of the Kyle Rittenhouse incident, you can see him running away as he's getting attacked. And he runs towards the police line. And there's like a ton of police cars just waiting off on the side with their lights on.
Exactly.
And then like they start coming in. It's like, why weren't you there in the beginning? I mean, you know, there's so many things that could have happened to avoid this whole situation. People like to say, well, Kyle should never have been there in the first place. But they don't say the same thing about the rioters. Like, the rioters should never have been there in the first place. First of all, their reasoning for rioting was total BS in the first place. And then they were going in there and just causing violence for the sake of violence. Say that about them. They shouldn't have been there in the first place. And then also, if the cops were actually doing their job or allowed to do their job or whatever the case may be, whoever made the decision.
I think allowed is the right answer there.
Yeah, whoever made the decision to not let the cops go in and do their job, I mean, they should be held accountable as well, because that allowed for this whole situation to just get ridiculously out of control. And I think hopefully we've learned our lesson now. You know, they called in the National Guard ahead of the Rittenhouse trial this time. And, you know, we need to, I think a lot of mayors and governors, you know, even some Democrats are seeing now that when this stuff is going to happen, or when you think that it may be possible that it's going to happen, you got to, you know, arm up and sack up right away. Yeah, be ahead of it.
Well, what I said last week, and I still stand behind this, is if I had a 17-year-old kid and he said, hey, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to go to Kenosha where this thing's going on here. I'm going to protect some property and I'm going to take this rifle with me. I would have locked him in his room. And I still stand behind that. And I think the parents have some responsibility here as well. So we'll see where it all goes. Martin Luther King stood for a color neutral society. That's what he stood for, right? I don't want my kids judged by the color of their skin. I want them judged by the content of their character. We call that equality of opportunity. The problem that we have on the left now, and even the BLM movement and all that, they want equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity. And I would take it even a step further. They want inequality of outcome to make up for historic sins.
Yeah, I mean, it's racism against whites. It's retributive, you know, punitive, tearing down whitey. I mean, that's what it is.
Well, and we'll see where this goes, because now you've got a situation in the same state in Wisconsin where a person of color, and I've already framed it in the news headlines about how the left is already framing this thing, that you've got this troubled man mm-hmm. and he was asking for help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they're going to put they're going to raise this guy up and make it not his fault that this happened.
Right.
We'll see where it goes
and
from there.
Another hole in this whole racism argument with the Kyle Rittenhouse case, which is, again, it's just BS to begin with. And when you can't really steel man it, because there's no argument there. But I saw a story that there was another case, another trial that was happening at the same exact time as the Kyle Rittenhouse trial with a black dude. And I don't really know many specifics about the case because I haven't looked in it, and it hasn't been in the news, in the headlines like Kyle Rittenhouse has. But there was another guy who was black who had a very similar case of self-defense, and he was also found not guilty, I believe, on the same day as Kyle Rittenhouse.
Oh, for the day when justice is truly blind.
Yeah.
Which is how this society
well, in this
was set
case,
up.
In this case, it appears that it was.
Yeah, it
right?
was but, in
I
this
mean,
case.
Assuming that the cases are comparable, which, you know, the headline is that there are both self-defense cases, so at least that part is comparable. But in terms of the specifics, you know, obviously there's going to be some differences. But both guys got off, you know. So, I mean, just that on itself, on its face, it was the same day, you know. So why aren't we talking about the other guy?
You made an interesting point, too, about how you should argue both sides. And, you know, if you're going to ever be a lawyer, I don't know if that's in your wheelhouse or not. I wanted to be a lawyer at one point. If you think about it, go back to like the Revolutionary War when John Adams defended the British soldiers in the Boston Massacre. Future mm-hmm. President of the United States defends, you know, a heinous act because everyone deserves a defense. And right. you have to argue both sides of it. And you do have to look at it from both sides. And hopefully we can do more of that on this podcast. We'll try it with the next topic. We're going to talk about COVID. COVID always in the news. How about this? The vaccine mandate, OSHA was going to say any company with 100 employees or more, you've got to have all your workers vaccinated, or they've got to take weekly tests or daily tests or whatever the hell it was at their own expense.
Yep. And it's an emergency. So yeah. You have to do it by January.
Yeah. Which we're still in November.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, that wasn't going to work out too well. So enough people, you know, to your point you've made on the podcast before, enough people stood up and said, you know what? I'm not doing that.
Yeah. I posted on the Facebook page, and all that I wrote was non-compliance works. And that could not be more clear with this specific instance with the vaccine mandate. I mean, there was companies, large companies, states, localities that were all suing OSHA and suing the federal government. And, you know, I believe either it was not serious to begin with, and it was just an effort to scare people into getting the vaccine, and they knew that it wouldn't get through the courts and they knew that they would get sued, or they did think that they could get it through, and then, you know, they saw the backlash from it. And yeah, at least for now, you know, things could change, but at least for now, there's a temporary stay on the order.
Well, so, speaking of lawsuits, there's a mom in Olathe whose 15-year-old daughter was vaccinated at Walmart, she says, against her wishes, and she's suing Walmart.
Vaccinated at Walmart.
Yeah. Against her wishes. Whew. Against parental consent. Where do you come down on that?
I mean,
Walmart says they have immunity in the case.
I'm not going to speak to my vaccination status, but I certainly, you know, would not want to get a vaccine at Walmart. I can say that much.
Well, there's vaccines happening everywhere, but the key part of this is whether or not consent was given, whether it needs to be given for a minor to get the COVID-19 vaccine.
Well, it needs to be given by the parent, right?
Well, apparently not. Because she says she didn't give her consent, and now she's suing Walmart.
So, yeah, she should win that lawsuit then. I mean, it's getting crazier. I mean, you have Fauci and other officials now talking about or teasing the idea of trials on infants of the COVID vax.
Call me a cynic, and you can. And I think I've even made this point before on the podcast. It's something I firmly believe. After we get past the midterm elections next year, I think COVID goes away as a story. Now, COVID's not going to go away. COVID is COVID. I mean, the flu is the flu. COVID is going to be with us. We have therapeutics for it. We have vaccines. The death rate from COVID is infinitesimal. And then you get back to the question of the people who have died from COVID and the people who have died with COVID.
Yeah.
It's such a political issue right now that after the midterms happen, this whole emergency thing, it's all going to go away.
Yeah. I mean, there's two conservative angles on this. I think the kind of broader conservative angle or libertarian angle maybe is that any government mandate on a health procedure is evil and unconstitutional. And I certainly agree with that. That applies to this particular mandate or any mandate. But then there's, you know, the more nuanced thing when you actually get into the science and, you know, not just the science, as the left likes to say it, and you actually talk about the specifics. I mean, let's talk about children, right? So few children have died from COVID. It's ridiculous. The death rate is insanely low. And I've seen studies that have suggested that as few as zero children with no pre-existing conditions have died in this country.
Again, that gets back to with COVID or from COVID.
Right.
I mean, that's two four-letter words, and I think they are huge. With and from.
Right. And when you talk about kids that have died from COVID or with COVID, you're talking about children with a huge amount of pre-existing conditions or very, very serious conditions like, you know, respiratory conditions, heart conditions, diabetes, severe obesity, things like this. When you talk about healthy children, which they're now pushing it on ages 5 to 12, I think, or something like that. When you talk about that age group, there is statistically as close to a 0% chance as is possible without being zero that your kid will be fine. And when you talk about the vaccine, there is also a statistically small chance that there will be complications from the vaccine. But if you go to the VAERS report, which is publicly available information and has been underreported, apparently, but there are adverse effects from the vaccine in children, in many children.
Well, again, this,
again, small, you know, statistically small,
right,
but not zero. So, I mean, is it really worth, you know, mandating this vaccine for kids? Because that is the next step. They're already trying to mandate for it for adults. They're going to mandate it for kids to go to school or to, you know, be in society with other children and stuff like that. And it's just nonsense.
Well, you know, to further underline and maybe highlight my point, if you as a healthy young male got COVID and walked out onto Westport Road and got hit by a car and died because of the politics of all this, your death would be listed as a COVID death.
Right. And that was never changed, by the way. As far as I know, that's still the case, because attention was brought to that towards the beginning of the pandemic and nothing changed.
Right.
They never changed the way that they are defining the COVID death. So as far as I know, that's still the case.
More relaxation of the restrictions. More school districts are coming forward and relaxing their restrictions. I put something up on the Facebook page about this. And Mark Westcott, my old friend from the record business, who's very much on the left, said, why would you go against the CDC? Well, why indeed? The fiction of the CDC is that they're all a bunch of white-coated doctors and lab rats and all that, and that's not true. I mean, maybe they are, but they are governed by Health and Human Services, which is a cabinet-level branch.
Yeah.
So in a sense, they are being governed by the Biden administration.
Yeah, I mean, my answer to that would be, why should I follow the CDC? Why in the world would I listen to the CDC?
Yeah.
They've lied this entire time. Fauci has lied this entire time about the pandemic. He's speaking out of both sides of his mouth. He's lied under oath to Congress. It's been proven that he funded gain-of-function research,
right,
on bat coronaviruses to make them more susceptible to respiratory infection at the Wuhan lab in China. How much clearer can you get? Don't trust these people.
But don't buy the fiction that the CDC is basically 100% science. There's politics involved there, and that's why I bring that point up, because that's a point from the left. I mean, why wouldn't you trust the CDC?
Yeah. I mean, it's such like a sheep normie mentality that is just so lame. You know, I mean, that's like my millennial speak coming out, but it's just so lame. I mean, if you still think that the CDC is totally above board and to be trusted, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like, look at the freaking data. Look at what they're saying. Look at the lies. I mean, it's blatantly obvious.
As school districts are making decisions about masks, one area that they don't have any control over is what happens on a school bus, because there is a federal mask mandate for school buses. And this gets to one of my core principles, and that is reducing this government back to what it actually says in the Constitution. And maybe a Republican president will go in there one day with balls and say, I don't need an energy department anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't need an education department anymore. Mm-hmm. It's his cabinet. It's her cabinet.
Right.
It's what they want, right? And because the federal Department of Education oversees this area, and because school districts want to get that federal funding, it comes with a large rope, not a string, a rope, that says, okay, well, you have to have mask mandates on buses.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think you could even take it one step further and say that not only are these departments not doing us any good, but in many cases, they're actually doing us a great deal of harm.
I think
the Department of Education is an obvious example. And even look at the Department of Transportation. I mean, the Secretary of Transportation has spent his tenure advocating for paternal leave and trying to get rid of racism in the roads. I mean, like, that's what we're dealing with. So That should
How
just be eliminated.
How is a road racist?
He should be fired,
yeah,
and that whole department should just be cut, as
well,
far
not
as
only
I'm concerned.
Is he not going to be fired? I mean, they're talking about running him for president.
Yeah.
There are rumors in D.C. that he's on a fast track to replace Kamala Harris vice president.
Oh, man. It's going to be so juicy. I can't wait.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I just want to have a normal government.
The drama is palpable.
I want to have a normal government where things happen that should happen, that are within the Constitution of the United States. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah. Yes, apparently.
Apparently it is. So the Department of Education went in during the Carter administration in the 1970s. Can you show me any school district where federal oversight has helped? I can show you lots of examples where suburban school districts who are trying to keep the federal government at bay have actually succeeded. But can you show me the progress in places like Kansas City, Missouri, and St. Louis, Missouri?
I can't think of any examples.
They are two of the worst school districts in the United States.
Yeah.
And they take millions and millions and millions in federal tax dollars.
Yeah.
And it's not improving a damn thing about education.
Right. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like our position is not just some ideologically based position of, you know, theoretical this and that. I mean, we have decades of data and decades of experience to show us that this is not working. You know, we're not just pulling this out of our ass.
Okay, to the economy, as we go into Thanksgiving here, a story from Tyson Foods. They're the biggest meat producer in the United States. Because of inflation, chicken up 19%, beef up 33%, pork up 38%, and turkey, good luck.
Yeah, I just bought a couple of beef roasts. We're making pot roasts. We're having a little Friendsgiving on Wednesday, and we're making a pot roast, and it was like, woo, it was like $20 for one freaking like 2.25 pound pot roast.
And that's insane. If you can find it. I mean, you look, go to the store. The shelves are still, you know, not fully stocked as we're used to here in the United States. And of course, the administration blames COVID on the supply chain issues.
Right.
How long will they keep using COVID as the punching bag for everything that's gone wrong under the Biden administration?
It is very convenient, isn't it, to have something to just blame all of your problems on. And in that case, they probably don't want it to go away because they can keep blaming it for everything.
Talks are underway to keep the nation out of default. Remember, they keep kicking that can down the road. December 15th is the next cliff. And as we talk about that, okay, against a backdrop of they just passed the quote-unquote bipartisan infrastructure bill, over $1 trillion for that.
Mm-hmm.
Build Back Better has been scored anywhere from $1.5 to $4.5 trillion, depending on who you ask. So, and of course, the CBC, which is nonpartisan, they say Build Back Better is going to add $500 billion to the debt. So we're going to be at this cliff again in a year. And you know what they say every time we get to one of these cliffs? The United States has never defaulted. When we pass these things, we pay for them. Okay, well, Democrats, you have passed this crap, and it's going to come back around again in a year. We're going to get out of the fiscal year again, and it's going to be, oh my gosh, we're going to have to raise the debt again.
Yeah, go figure. I mean,
it's like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Yeah.
We can't get out of the loop of the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, because their greed is out of control. Their idea that they can fix all of our problems is the problem, and spending is the problem. So until we get spending under control, we're going to keep dealing with this every year, and the creep is going to continue where they're going to spend more and more every year, you know, and it's just going to keep going.
And it just keeps going up and up and up. And as it goes up and up and up, my friends on the other side say, well, Trump spent a lot.
That's true.
Hey, he did.
And we criticize him for that.
I'm not letting anybody off the hook. You know, yeah. I want a government that we're probably never going to see in my lifetime. At some point, you just can't keep going up and up and up on the debt.
Right.
At some point, it will matter.
Right.
And as interest rates go up, it will really matter. Right now, we're at historic lows in interest rates. As those start to creep up, that's when you'll start to see the debt really matter. To Donald Trump's point, when he was president, he said, look, interest rates are really, really low. We should be borrowing to build. I mean, that's what a business does. And he ran the government like a business.
Well, the government is not a business.
No, but he ran it like one.
Right. I mean, and that's good in a lot of ways. You know, that's good in a lot of ways. We had a lot of job growth. We had energy production. We were competing on the global market. All of these good things. But that can't come at the cost of you know, spending out our ass, which was the case under Trump and continues to be the case under Biden, and will continue to be the case under the next president.
Well, here we go again. More Americans are quitting their jobs. They even have a name for it now. The Great Resignation is underway.
They have a name for everything.
They do have a name. The Great Resignation. And what causes the Great Resignation?
The Great Reset.
COVID. You're missing it. COVID.
Yeah.
Because COVID's the punching bag for everything.
Right, right.
Yeah. So the Great Resignation is underway. There are 10.4 million job openings in this country, and the Labor Secretary blames COVID for
that. Are you trying to say something? Do you have an announcement, Dale?
No, I don't, because I'm a boomer. You know, the people that are your age, you know, they criticize me for that because I've been working since I was 13. I live on less than I make. I've saved for retirement earlier than anybody thought I should.
Mm-hmm.
So that's boomer speak.
It is. But you know, we love you for it.
I mean, you know, why shouldn't I just do what everybody else does, stay home and wait for a check? And when when I don't get it, I'll break into Louis Vuitton and grab a bag, because that's the American way these days.
Solving racism.
Yeah, exactly.
One bag at a time.
Just crazy. So, you know, and it's funny because every time I hear Biden say, we're going to do the Build Back Better thing and we're going to create all these great jobs, we have 10.4 million jobs.
Yeah.
Employers are jumping through hoops to get people to come to work.
Yeah. Yeah. He's all over Twitter. I mean, now that we're on Twitter, at Dale Carter's Amer, no ICA on Twitter, Biden is just like, I mean, multiple times a day, he's really pushing this Build Back Better thing so hard. And it's almost like he can tell that it's not popular because the way that he's phrasing it, he's like, come on, you know, like, this is going to be fine. This is good, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's not, he's not popular. I mean, he is at 36%,
yeah,
which is really low.
He was at 38%. I didn't think it could go any lower than that, but here we are.
Kamala Harris is at 28%.
Yeah.
So it can go quite a bit lower. How about some good news? Let's go to a science update which has some good news. Good news for me personally, because I have Alzheimer's in my family. One grandparent on each side actually died from Alzheimer's. Hospital in Boston launching the first human trial of a nasal vaccine to prevent and slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. That would be a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know anything about that, so I don't know anything
about
that.
Well, I hope you don't ever know about it, because when you deal with Alzheimer's, I mean, I just remember, like, my grandfather on my mother's side, they lived about a block away from us, and my grandfather would, in a city, right? And my grandfather would call my mother at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning and say, I need to go feed the horses, because they used to live on a farm. Mm-hmm. So my mother would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, drive to my grandfather's house, pick him up, drive him around the block, and then take him back home again.
Mm.
My grandmother on my dad's side, you'd be talking to her, having a normal conversation, and the next thing, I mean, it would be like a non sequitur. She would start talking about somebody, and you had no idea what she was talking about.
Right, right.
So it's a terrible disease. It took Ronald Reagan, among other people. And it's something that scientists have been working on, and I think it gives us some hope here that the first human trial of a nasal vaccine to prevent and slow the progression of Alzheimer's is being tested, at least, in Boston. So go, doctors. We appreciate your efforts on that. When we come back, we'll talk about Thanksgiving 2021, some interesting stats, and JFK 58 years later. All that just ahead on Dale Carter's America.
Christmas at Frontier Justice means big savings for you and your family. Beat the shortage with 100-round 9mm Browning ammo for $34.99. Save $150 on select Springfield Saint rifles and get the 6-Hour Romeo 5 Red Dot for only $119.99. Another $40 in savings. First 100 people through the door on Saturday at every location will be entered to win the Byrna SD Launcher, valued at $399. Faith, Family, Freedom, and Lee Summit and KCK are online at frontier-justice.com.
All right, as we go into Thanksgiving, a couple little nuggets for you. In Huntley, Illinois, Kurt, they're having a turkey testicle festival.
Right on.
Would you do that? Would you eat them?
What? Yeah, I was going to say it depends on what we're doing with them.
They're turkey testicles. Yeah. It costs you $20 to get in the conversation. They've got 1,200 pounds of turkey testicles. Attendees have to be 21 or older. You qualify there. And they say the testicles are fried like chicken nuggets.
Why do you have to be 21 or older? Are they like alcoholic or something?
I have no idea.
Are they putting booze in the
Maybe
testicles?
Maybe there's parental consent involved before you imbibe on a turkey testicle. A Harris study out says 68% of people at Thanksgiving eat food they don't like. Do you eat food you don't like at Thanksgiving?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, honestly, this is kind of a dividing issue amongst Americans. I don't dislike turkey, but it's not my favorite.
Not your favorite
thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd rather have, like I said, we're making pot roast and fried chicken and stuff like that. I would rather have ham or beef, you know, or something else than turkey. I mean, it's okay.
Where do you come down on green bean casserole?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love green bean casserole.
Not a fan. I like green beans. I like fresh sauteed green beans and broccoli.
But when you put in the cream of mushroom soup and then you put on those little crunchy onion things on top, you leave it in the oven until it gets really crisp so it's nice and crunchy. That's my jam.
No way.
How about cranberries?
They're okay. I don't really eat the cranberry sauce that
Hard
much.
Hard pass for me. Cranberries are nasty. Sweet potatoes?
Love sweet potatoes.
Hate them. So pumpkin pie?
Eh, take it or leave it.
Disgusting. And I won't eat it. At 58 years old, I've gotten to a point, Kurt, where I've eaten everything I'm going to eat. I don't need to try anything else. I know what I like, and I know, more importantly, what I don't like.
Now that's boomer speak.
Fine. So there you go. Happy Thanksgiving from all of us at Dale Carter's America. I want to leave you with this.
So while we're on the topic of Thanksgiving, before we end the show, I just wanted to say I'm thankful for my family and friends. I'm blessed with, you know, good health. I'm thankful for the audience that is listening to this podcast and everyone who, you know, has jumped on board and joined the conversation. And I'm thankful for you, Dale, for having me on and giving me this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm thankful that I live in the greatest country in the history of the world. I mean, and despite all of her flaws, I know that better days are coming. I mean, and that's what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for you and what we're able to do here. Even the folks who disagree with us, I'm thankful for you too, because we've got to continue that conversation. Disagreement is an American thing. Mm-hmm. We've disagreed all the way back to before the country was founded in 1776. We disagreed on things. Out of disagreement comes great governance. And I saw something on Facebook the other day that great legislation is 60 votes in the Senate. Because that shows you had a true bipartisan thing that moved forward and moved the country forward. So I'm very thankful. I do think that we're living in Jimmy Carter 2.0, but Jimmy Carter 1.0 gave us Ronald Reagan.
Right.
And if Joe Biden gives us the next Ronald Reagan because things get so bad that we need somebody who really knows what the hell they're doing, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope.
Yeah. Hope. It's not a strategy. It's just something that we hope, and, mm-hmm. and we'll get there eventually. But what John F. Kennedy said, because on Monday it was the 58th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy was a Democrat, a hero of mine as I was growing up. Now, I was only 2 months old when he was assassinated, but my mom had this album in her album collection of JFK speeches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always wanted to get into radio from the earliest age. And I listened to this album over and over and over again. And I really honed in on his inaugural address in 1961. You know, it began, "We stand today on the edge of a new frontier," you know, frontier of the 1960s, moving on. But would John F. Kennedy be a Democrat if he were alive in 2021? Think about some of the things that he did. He lowered taxes. He lowered taxes.
Yeah.
He was strong on defense. He eyed down the Soviet Union and the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what John F. Kennedy said that really meant something to me that I go back to over and over and over again, the reason why I know that he would not be a Democrat today is because of what he said during his inaugural address. "Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country," where now the maxim is, "What can I get from my country?"
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
And if you don't believe it, this is John F. Kennedy from January 20th, 1961. This is Dale Carter's America.
"And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country."
The views expressed on Dale Carter's America are Dale's and Kurt Wheeler's. They do not necessarily reflect the views of KFKF or Steel City Media. Comments can be sent to DaleC@KFKF.com. Thanks for listening. Check back every week for new episodes.